time to unleash your inner cowboy with the Earn Your Spurs podcast. Now, here's your host, Alyssa Barnes.
Hey, Earn Your Spurs listeners, welcome to episode number 11 of the Earn Your Spurs podcast. I'm your host, Alyssa Barnes. Today's episode is a little different than the ones you've heard in the past. It's actually the first interview I've done on location. This interview with rodeo clown slash entertainer slash barrel man, JJ Harrison, was done on site at the Nile Rodeo in Billings, Montana. Now, if you've ever been to a rodeo, you've definitely been entertained by that funny guy in the arena. And today's interview with JJ really gives you an insight into what he actually does and how his job works and how he's achieved success in his career. You'll also hear some horse whinnies in the background because we were inside his trailer right next to the pen of bucking horses at the rodeo. And towards the end of the interview, they were actually starting to do a run through of the opening of the rodeo performance that night. So you probably can't make it out, but America the Beautiful is playing in the background at the very end. A couple of quick announcements before we get started. I just want to let you know that I recently had some Earn Your Spurs t-shirts designed, and you can actually find those at earnyourspurs.com. I'm currently running a Teespring campaign, so if you want to go check those out on the website and possibly order one through Teespring, they'll only be available for a limited time, so definitely check those out. There's t-shirts and long-sleeve t-shirts and hoodies, and the designs are pretty cool, so even if you don't want to buy one, check them out anyway. I also just got in some Earn Your Spurs auto stickers that you can stick on your truck or car or whatever. And I'm going to be giving those out to anybody who leaves me a review in iTunes. So all you have to do is go to iTunes, leave a review, take a screenshot of that review and email it to me at alyssa@earnyourspurs.com. That's A-L-Y-S-S-A at earnyourspurs.com, along with your address so I can send you one of the Earn Your Spurs stickers. Now, without further ado, let's talk to JJ Harrison.
I mean, I've been called a barrel man because I worked the barrel during the bull ride, and I've been called an entertainer, rodeo clown, clown bullfighter. I mean, I've seen lots of different things, but I would say that my job is probably an entertainer, you know, because that's kind of what I do. I'm not a bullfighter. I leave that to the bullfighters. There's people that are good at that job, and so I'll entertain during the bull riding and certainly work the barrel if necessary. Like here at the Nile, you know, I'm instructed, you know, keep it back, keep it out of the way. We don't want to run a bull off. You don't want to bring a bull out to the barrel. And there's a lot of guys in this business that do that. They think they've got to be in there and get in the way and that they're helping. And the reality is that they're not in a lot of ways. So staying back, waiting for that bull that bucks out a little too far for the cowboy to run to the fence, that's when the barrel man needs to take that hit. And so, in terms of working the barrel, that's my philosophy on it. But, you know, I love to entertain people. And so I would prefer to be called an entertainer.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. And I think that's what they call Flint in the PBR, isn't it? He's the entertainer.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I would assume.
I thought maybe the term was sort of changing from barrel man or clown.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Well, I think it's changing with certain guys. I think there's different mindsets. You know, I put the fan first and my job, I think, is to do that. And then come bull riding time, everything is always about safety. Everything is always about safety. It doesn't matter if safety of the fans, safety of the contestants, safety of the rodeo queens. I mean, I'm the first guy to jump the fence and go run into any kind of hang up. And so I think if you do that as a natural thing, then to be an entertainer is your job. My job is to entertain, but my nature is to protect.
Right. Well, I'm here with JJ Harrison at the Nile Rodeo in Billings, Montana. And how long have you been working this rodeo, JJ?
This is year number 5.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this is my 5th year this year, and I'm already slated for next year. So I'll have a minimum of 6 years here in Billings at the Nile. My first year was the year that we moved buildings because the tornado or hurricane, whatever, came through and ripped the top off the Rimrock Arena. So I was here the year we did 4 performances in the horse barn. And, you know, and that was great. Shoot, I had a good time down there. And it's awesome because it was jam-packed. It was absolutely packed to the gills. You couldn't put any more people in there because there's just less seating.
Yeah, I remember that year well. That was my first year here at the Nile, and that was the first time I met you.
Yeah.
And I got to escort you around to all your interviews.
Where I talk. Yeah. A lot.
Yeah, I got to know a lot about you in those few days.
So. Yeah.
Well, thanks for being here today and coming on the show with me. We've got a lot of background noises going on because we're at the rodeo.
Caterers. But, yeah. I mean, we're here live on the grounds, people. There's stuff going on. They don't shut down for us.
So tell me, like, I'd love to hear your story, you know, your history and how you got involved in rodeo in the first place and sort of your path to get where you are today.
You bet. Well, my mother is an attorney in Okanagan County, and my stepfather that I grew up with most of my life is a Superior Court judge. So clearly you can just see rodeo oozing out of those two professions. You know, I was a country kid, and Okanagan, Washington is where my mom and I moved to be with my stepdad and his family, and it was just country. You're just country people, and we had acreages and had some horses, and you know, it's a Western way of life, but I grew up kind of having my grandfather and whatnot, uncles playing that old Hank Williams Sr. and you know, that old school country music, Johnny Cash, all that. And you know, I to this day, it's not my music. You know, I was that rebellious kid that when I hear that stuff, I love it, but I love it because it reminds me of great family members in my life. And you know, I grew up being a hunting guy and doing a little hunting, even did a little guiding here and there, and you know, it was just a fun way to grow up. Big into sports as a high school kid. Loved to play. I was a small town kid, so I was a decent athlete and got to play. When there's not a lot to pick from, you get to play a lot more. And so there was a lot of that went on at my high school. And you know, it was. I've always been an entertainer, always from day one, and it's because of my mother pushing on you to make people feel comfortable. You know, you've got to make friends. You've got to be compassionate and care about other people. And they would have parties at the house. And my mom was a school teacher for a while, and before she got into law. And she would, you know, have parties at the house, and we would say to me, you know, hey, you need to make sure that you speak to everybody that comes. And it's that kind of stuff that was instilled pretty early that kind of helps me do my job today. You make people or help people to feel comfortable. If there's that person who shows up and they're kind of out of place or they feel uncomfortable, you're the one that reaches out, goes over there and visits with them and helps them to find some comfort and some connections to people in the room and that kind of thing. And so a lot of people do it. It's human nature to be social, but we sometimes lose sight of it. And I think that's one thing that certainly helps me do my job. In terms of keeping going, fast forward a little bit, I didn't get into rodeo itself until my senior year of high school. I started trying to be a bull rider and literally hid it from my parents. Didn't tell them.
Really?
Yeah, they're fairly intelligent people. And my real dad is very involved in my life, and he's a school teacher. And he and my mom, when they were together, had a ranch in Grass Valley, Oregon, where I was born and lived the first four or five years of my life. And they had horses and whatnot, and my dad is not a horse guy at all. Like, I have never seen horses instantly hate a human being like my dad. I don't know what it is, but he was a college basketball player and very good athlete, and my mom was a cheerleader, and it, you know, they had that little fairy tale romance and wedding and had me, and you know, then they decided that you can't create any greater human being than me, so they got... They got divorced and you know, no, I don't know. But, you know, it's just funny how different things pop up in your life. But from high school, got into the rodeo thing a little bit. And when I went on to college, I got really into roping. And so I was a team roper bull rider my first year in college, which is a weird combination.
Yeah.
It's a very weird combination. But, you know, I was trying to feel out what was going to be my strength in rodeo. I loved rodeo. I knew that I enjoyed being a contestant. I like the cowboy thing just fit me to a T. It fits my personality. It fits a lot of what I find value in. You know, I think a real cowboy does too. And so it fit for me. The main difference is the rodeo cowboy sometimes has the persona of being kind of a beer drinking, tobacco chewing guy. And I've, you know, even from high school, I've just never been a big drinker. I don't like the taste of beer at all. And I just, I'm a sugar guy, man. You know, and so if they may, you know, what is it, Boone's Farm? You know, I could drink a Boone's Farm. Heck yeah. But I just, I've never been a big drinker, and I've always tried to end up being the driver. And so even in college rodeoing, I was, you know, kind of a little bit different than a lot of my peers. Number one, you're in college. Number two, you're at a rodeo. Those are two combinations where drinking's usually found. And, you know, I'm kind of about safety a little bit. I always like to be the driver, make sure people get home and, you know, and be the one that remembers the stories and tell the stories and entertain people with the stories of college, you know. But and that's not to say that I don't ever drink. A lot of people think that JJ never drinks, or that it's some kind of religious thing or something to that effect. And it's really not. It's really not. It's just I enjoy. I'm pretty high on life, so I just don't need it. I like to remember everything and be a part of the activities. But you know, I like to be pretty sober about it. Probably, I think my sophomore year of college, I got stepped on the back of my head coming off of a bull, and it didn't hurt me so much as it literally scared me. I had some friends that were injured, and one kid is you know, paralyzed to this day from a rodeo injury, and I not having the passion and the drive to be a bull rider. You know, it takes a serious passion. You've got to want, it's got to be, you know, an intrinsic motivation to, I want to conquer that beast. I want to ride the animal. And I didn't. I used rodeo to get girls, man. I mean, I wanted to be cool, and that's what it was to me. And so clearly I was more of a timed event guy at that point and enjoyed doing it. I had some success roping. I've got a few buckles on the wall, but it, I don't have the talent to make a career out of it. And being a Washington State Cougar, I just went right into the family business. And what I haven't said yet is that probably 80% of my family is school teachers. My dad's wife at the time was a school teacher. Uncles, aunts, you know, on my mom's side, everybody's been a school teacher. And my mom was too, and then decided she liked money. And she wanted to do something else. And so, you know, and teaching is obviously it's kid oriented, but it's a great job. It's a great job because you literally get an opportunity to spread knowledge into the next generation. And, you know, as cliched as it might sound, I like doing that. I like advancing kids. I like making people smarter. You know, like when they come in contact with me at the end of the day, they're smarter than when I met them at the beginning of the day. And that makes me feel good. And to be an effective teacher, I think you have to be an entertainer anyway. You've got to kind of entertain a kid and slip a little learning in when they're not ready. And so I loved it. Teaching school was fun for me. And I was kind of team roping on the side of it. But I got my teaching degree from Washington State. Go Cougs. And then got right into a teaching job and taught school for 8 years. Intermixed in that, I started a rodeo clown profession, and it was brought up. I was at a team roping, and I met a couple of guys. One of them was Pat Beard, and his dad's Frank Beard of Beard Rodeo Company. And so long story short, he put a bull riding on, and he just said, "Hey, you know, you ever thought about being an entertainer?" And his mother-in-law at the time I taught school with, and she just said, "Oh my gosh, you got to get this guy. He'd be great at it." And she was a big advocate of mine, and she, between her talking me into it and him kind of needing somebody, I said, you know, what the heck, I'll give it a whirl. And so, and all I had really done from my years of rodeoing was watched some just atrocious clowns, just what I would consider to be old school, come out, blow up a car, you know. And so you got to have some kind of big boom, you got to wear big baggy pants, you got to do, you know, that was the style. And so that's what I tried to do. I tried to emulate that. My first event ever, I think, well, I put more effort into that one deal I had an act that had dogs and in the incredible shrinking neutron box, and I shrunk a dog down to a smaller size and then messed up and had it get too big, and obviously had three dogs. And, you know, I think the whole crowd knew what was coming. You know, they've probably seen an act just like it. Who knows? But everything I did fell apart. Everything from every act, from my neutron box, you know, all the duct tape fell off the side of it, and the dog knocked his way out right in the middle of the act, destroying the whole premise of shrinking the dog. I mean, just everything was a train wreck. But they were hysterical because I just ad-libbed it. Mm-hmm. I just let people know, and I made fun of my duct taping abilities, and I went into – basically, I started doing what I do now, which is just off-the-cuff humor, just trying to find funny in little things that are happening right now. And as soon as that worked, that's what got me going, okay, you know what? If I'm going to do this job, this is the way I'm going to do it. Nah. I taught school for 8 years, 8 years of teaching school, Walla Walla, Washington, and all middle school teaching experience. And then I moved to what's called a dean of students, which is like an administrator that's paid like a teacher. And, you know, but all of my teaching has been at the middle school level. And so I know that a lot of comedy is born right there in the middle school level. I mean, we laugh still. We get into high school and things become so serious. And I feel like the middle school brain and the middle school mindset is still, it's in a mix. It's adult, heading to this adult mindset, but it's still a little elementary school kid that giggles and snickers. And so I got a lot of my comedy and a lot of what I do today, you know, I think I owe to my years of teaching school. But that's what got it done, man. That's my path right there. I went from, you know, parents that – I don't have anybody that ever rodeoed. I have some uncles that competed at team ropings, and some guys competed at some amateur rodeos. But nobody in my family has ever even remotely gotten close to ever buying a PRCA rodeo card or anything of the likes. And so, you know, I think that made my path a little bit tougher. I certainly did it like a I would consider it like a baseball player. I started in the minor leagues. I started at the amateur rodeo level. I went through, I had a couple years of amateur rodeos. I had a rodeo actually purchase my PRCA card for me because they wanted me to work their rodeo. And so I said, okay, and that's what took me to the next step. And then I went from having, you know, three PRCA rodeos 1 year to seven the next year to 14 to where I'm at today, which is, you know, pretty full schedule. And,
yeah,
you know, I guess we'll probably get into more stuff later, but that's probably the path. You know, I'll shut up for a little while. Let you ask a question.
No, that's okay. I want to hear you talk.
I just keep talking. I mean, I'll just keep telling you the whole deal, but that's probably start to finish. That's what started me into rodeo. You know, I owe some big kudos, obviously, to Pat Beard and his family at the time. They were the ones that saw it in me. They were the ones that saw it in me. And they said this early on, and I've heard a lot of this throughout my career, but they were big fans of Flint Rasmussen. Mm-hmm. And I think that they looked at some of the parallels, like former school teacher and kind of witty and kind of off the cuff, and thought that I'd be good at the job. Now, that said, I will say in the same breath, I did not know Flint from anybody. And Flint and I are friends now, but I haven't had but 4 or 5 years where I've even known him, and even, you know, the last 2 or 3 years we've kind of become better friends. But for the first time, I got to work with him in St. Paul over the 4th of July. We worked an event together, and I finally agreed, or I see it now, why people always try and throw me into that category, whether it's positive or negative. Some guys that are down on me will say, well, he's just trying to be a Flint. And I've heard that a lot. And then I've had people say, hey, you know, that's so great, you're like Flint. And I never really understood what that meant. I've, you know, obviously Flint has his style and I have mine. But when we worked together, it was the first time that I'd ever seen, we are similar in a lot of ways, but it's not in a way that you can emulate or pretend to be, I guess. I don't know. You can't mimic it. Because his off-the-cuff stuff played right into my off-the-cuff stuff. And then when he'd start into something, I'd just join him and take off on this different, you know, it's like taking a left turn all of a sudden. And then I'd go into something and boom, he'd be right there with me to add his own little 2 cents. And it was always funny. And And it just, we worked really well together, I felt. Now, if you interview him, he might say that stupid idiot was in my way the whole time. But, you know, I certainly enjoyed it. And, you know, it was a great experience for me.
I would have liked to see you two work together because having seen both of you work independently, I can imagine that you probably would really work well together.
We let Justin McKee say about 5 words between the two of us.
And that's probably no easy task either.
I mean, it's always two announcers. You're always fighting. You know, you go, I do Reno and I love Reno and it's one of my favorites, but I get Bob Tallman and Wayne Brooks, two great, outstanding announcers, outstanding, but they can both talk you under the table. So when you've got, you know, three microphones plus a sound guy, you've got, you know, a Jill Franzen or Chuck Lopman or Jason Buchanan or somebody that's got a real talent with that mouse finger, they're an equal contributor. So you've got to make sure that you don't walk over a funny song that they're playing. And so it is a timing thing. But, yeah, for the first time, I was the clowns outnumbered the announcer, and it was fun. And no better guy to do it with than Flint.
Yeah, I bet. So you mentioned that you, when you first started rodeoing, just going back a little bit, you hid it from your parents.
Oh, yeah.
How did you manage that?
Well, I mean, bull ride, they don't run in a real circle of bull riders. Let's just say that. So it was pretty easy to keep it from my parents. They don't hang out on the weekends with too many stock contractors. But it started up in Tenasket, Washington with Hughes were their names, and they raised bulls, and they needed kids to try them out and warm them up and see what they had. And so it started with that, and then I would enter some events in Lewiston during the my first year of college. I would go down, and they would have kind of a, not maybe it was weekly, but you know, we'd go every other week or sometimes twice, but in a row, but they'd have little rodeos in the indoor building there in Lewiston. And so I'd go down. I always entered the bull ride and the team roping. And I entered the calf roping, or tie down roping, excuse me, a couple times. And then I've entered every event trying it. And, you know, I tried to ride Bronx. I tried to be a bareback rider. And, you know, it finally came to a head when I had a buddy call the house and left a message talking about, you know, hey, Hughes called, he's got a couple bulls, tryout bulls for Thursday, so let's meet at the arena. And my mom got a hold of that, and it was kind of like a, you know, I think that's how it came to pass. Is they, what's going on? Of course, I don't lie to him. I just said, well, I'm trying this. And, you know, it was the first time my stepdad's ever said anything cross to me. He's like, are you stupid? You know what I mean? It was just like, and I think that maybe they knew I don't have the passion for it, or maybe it's the ability, I don't know, but you know, I'm certainly an athletic guy, so I think if my mind was on being a successful bull rider, I would have done it, I would have stayed with it, but it wasn't. And I think maybe that's what my parents noticed, is that my head wasn't really in it for the right reasons. And so you know, and like a lot of contract people, I think that we all start to be rodeo stars, competitor stars, and then we all kind of, you know, venture off in our own categories.
Yeah. Well, you find what fits for you, I
find
guess.
Your niche, man.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I interviewed Wiley Peterson recently, and obviously he had a huge bull riding career, and he talked about how if your heart isn't in it, I mean, if you're not like completely passionate about bull riding and you don't like get up every day just ready to go do it, that is probably not the right career for you.
It's,
and you're probably going to get hurt.
Yeah, it's absolutely not for you. And so
you have to crave it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You do. I've said that in interviews. You know, I didn't crave it. And so I had a pretty short-term career. I mean, I did at the beginning, you know, and I covered a few bulls, and it's like a good golf shot, man. You know, you go out there and you lose 30 golf balls and you hit one drive 300 yards down the middle and you think, man, I can do this. I'm a golfer. And it kind of keeps you hooked. And, you know, I wasn't so bad at it that I didn't ride some bulls. And so you make the whistle. It's a great feeling. Jump off, throw your hands in the air, and you know, you just, it's a touchdown, you know, to put it in terms of football, or a goal in terms of soccer. It's that moment where it's just, yes, I just did that.
Right. Yeah. What do you think in your career now,
What do you think is your primary role when you're out there in the arena as far as connecting the audience to the Cowboys in the arena?
You bet. I'm the guy that at the end of the show, you'll know me the best if you're a fan. And it's just simple time. I mean, I'm out there the whole show. These Cowboys and Cowgirls come out, they compete for 8 seconds, you know, and that's the rough stock events, timed events. They come out and, you know, you might see a Bulldogger for 4.3 seconds and hear his name. It's hard to make a connection with that. Mm-hmm. It's a great show. It's a good event, but it's hard to, at the end of the rodeo, tell me who competed that night. But they can usually tell you who the clown was.
Right.
They usually know me, and I try to take pride in that, and I try to take that on it in a lot of different ways. Because they'll see me the whole time, and I'm the only voice and visual connection that they have. So they've got an auditory because they can hear me, and visual, they can see me. And so it naturally, they feel like they know me a little bit at the end of the rodeo. So it puts me in a pretty powerful position to kind of connect rodeo fans to rodeo contestants and the rodeo world itself. I'm that bridge that they can cruise across. They can, you know, start with me and visit and talk to me and get my autograph, but then they can ask me, hey, do you know how I can get a hold of Tough Cooper? Do you know, can I say hi to Tough or Trevor or Olin Hannon or, you know, anybody? And so it's pretty neat that I can connect people like that. But, you know, I want people to have fun. At the end of the day, if the rodeo, if they leave with a good, happy feeling about the event, it doesn't matter what it was that gave them that feeling. They'll come to another rodeo. They and their family had fun. And so a lot of it, what I look at, my role is entertaining kids during the rodeo so that the parents can drink a beer and watch the show. You know, I almost said watch TV, but that we are getting more rodeo on TV, and that's what we're up against. Mm-hmm. We're competing for that against so many different entertainment values. And there's only so many entertainment bucks out there that a family can afford to spend on what entertains them. And so we want to be a family show, and we want to also offer to that wild and crazy, want to come out and have a good time crowd. We want the entertainment dollars to be spent at our entertainment venue. So we've got to be smart and we've got to be savvy about how we do that. And I feel like I play a critical role in people leaving, having had a good time. And maybe they'll be talking about me, maybe they won't. But if they leave happy, I was definitely a part of it. And so I think that's a priority, is that we all take that role on, you know.
Why do you think someone should come to a rodeo? I mean, why should someone who lives in the city, who has no ties to agriculture or anything like that, why should they come to a rodeo?
Well, you're looking, it's a window to the past. I mean, everything that we do, we haven't reinvented the wheel in any way in rodeo. Everything that happens at a rodeo is an event that used to happen on the wild, wild west frontier. And so it takes you back in time. We're very, very traditional in a lot of ways. I think that, you know, you're going to hear a prayer at the beginning of a rodeo, at a large portion of them. We're very patriotic. We're very pro-America. You know, certainly there's a lot of big conservative nature, but it's fun to experience. And a good rodeo is a production. It has a good production value to it. You know, here at the Nile, we have Bo Wagner, and his job is production. He is there to make sure that things go off in accordance with how we want them to, from spotlights to pyro to transition of events. You know, in a lot of other sports, you got just one sport you're dealing with. Well, rodeo is encompassed by, you know, 7, 8, 9 events, depending on the different levels of rodeo. And so you're trying to piece all those together to make one show. And you might have a fan sitting up there that is not a fan of tie down roping. That's a common thing that we hear in rodeo, and that's okay. We still want you to come to the rodeo. That doesn't have to be your favorite event. During the tie down roping, you can pay attention more to the clown. You can listen more to the announcer. You can enjoy the music. You can watch the horses work, or you can go get a hot dog. You know, I mean, we try to provide something for everybody in the family. Every person has their little niche that they think is the best. And, you know, I ask people, and it's not an ego question, it's really not, you know, what's your favorite part? And it's maybe some of it's because I'm the one asking, but usually it's probably at least 40% will say, oh, you were. And that comes back to that deal that I'm the thing that they can remember the best because they saw me and they heard me the whole rodeo.
Right.
Right. I don't think that I really am. I think that's an inflated number. I think that 40% that say I'm the best part of the rodeo have just kind of forgotten some of the other things that they saw that night.
Well, and they feel like they've connected with you because right. you're there the whole time. They feel like, you know, you're interacting with them. They feel like they know you on some level sure. more than some, you know, bulldogger that comes out for 4 seconds and, right. and leaves the arena. So
yeah, it is. And that's true. It's just, it's, you know, I think I keep it into perspective that a lot of times I'm the answer, number one, because it's me asking. Number two, because it's what they feel comfortable with. They know that happened. They know I was there the whole time. And yeah. you're exactly right. It's just comfort. But it doesn't matter. If they leave happy, we've all done our jobs.
Yeah. Well, that's what's important. So beyond, you know, kind of stumbling into this profession, what did you do to sort of advance your career and get your act down the way that it's, you know, it's you, it speaks to who you are? I mean, how did you develop that?
You know, a lot of what I developed was just better timing. It's funny for me because I'll have people say to me, you know, oh, you've gotten a lot better, or man, you've made it. You finally got there. The reality is my first event ever, I'm doing the exact same thing as I do today. I'm ad-libbing. And so it's, for me, it's kind of funny to have the occasional, you know, oh, you've gotten so much better since you were in the amateur rodeos, or oh, you've grown so much. And I'm thinking, okay, cool, you know, because those are only good things. So I accept them, smile and nod and say thank you. But it's the stuff that I'm doing is the exact same. What, you know, the main difference is what I wear and you know, some of the little things that I can add in based on experience. But what's changed the most is my timing. I think that, you know, I, as a competitor, I kind of know when somebody's hung up. I kind of know when somebody's about to nod their head to stay out of the way. But, you know, over time, I've gotten better with the timing, just making sure, because people don't realize my job is it's like the worst stand-up comedic job you could ever apply for. Your job, okay, here's what we want you to do, JJ. We want you to come out on this stage, and we want you to be funny, okay? So you're going to go home. You're going to come up with some material. You're going to get this material all squared away. And so many jokes, things rely on comedic timing. I don't know if you've ever heard that term, but comedic timing is important. Sometimes it's just a long pause. Sometimes it's a look. But to make your thing funny. So you come out with this great material. You step out onto the stage. You start to deliver your comedy. And somebody goes, okay, hold on, be quiet. We've got to watch this over here. Right. We got to watch this over here. You be quiet. So now you're done. No matter where you're at, you're done. And then you watch the show. And then pretty soon, we're hung up. Oh, quick. Hey, be funny right now. Be funny. And so you're great. No problem. You start to be funny. And oh, be quiet. We're back. We got to go back to this. So it's a weird job. You're in, you're out. You're in, you're out. And, you know, sometimes you're filling between a section. Like you've got bulldog and then team roping. Well, they're going to need 30 seconds to load those steers. And so they might look to you to fill that 30 seconds. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? And so you've got to have something. The good ones, I think, have something for those little moments. They've got something that they throw in. And I'm a fan of something off cuff. But if you don't have something off the cuff, then you're going to do a joke. And there's a lot of old school guys that they'll have a big joke right there. And they'll stretch that joke to about 30 seconds and sell the joke and go right into the next event. And that's a great way to do it, too. It's not my style, but it's a good way. It's worked for a lot of years, and there's a lot of guys that still do that. So, you know, I'm not trying to put one style down. It's just I'm not a very good joke teller. You know, I don't tell jokes. I do comedy. That's what I like to say. And so it's a fun job, but it definitely has its challenges. You know, if somebody – we got hung up here Thursday night, and there was about a minute and 30 seconds that we needed – to fill the cover while they got the barrel racing eyes to work. And so, you know, all I heard was JJ. And so I looked up, sure enough, the arena, you know, we need me. So I hop out and just try and figure out what's going on and then try to fill something similar. And so I ran the barrel pattern a couple of times, ran it wrong. I mean, I don't even remember what I did exactly, but it covered the time. And I think that's important to be able to do that kind of stuff. And that's what's improved in time with me is those little off the cuff things have gotten just sharper and just a little bit better every year that I get to do the job.
Yeah, it's constant improv all the time.
Mm-hmm. It really is. And I think that you know, a savvy rodeo fan, like a Montana rodeo fan, will appreciate that and will know that, man, this guy's off the cuff. He's working. He's not giving us a set can of jokes. You know, here's your can of rodeo clown. Enjoy. Mm-hmm. Instead, it's we don't know what he's going to do.
Yeah. And it's kind of hard to classify you guys. I mean, we talked at the beginning about, are you a rodeo clown? Are you an entertainer? Are you a barrel man? You know, what is your title? But really, you wear a lot of hats because you're a comedian, you're a clown, you're an entertainer, you're improvisational, and you have to do all of those things well. It's not like you can just go to clown college and be a rodeo clown, right?
I don't think there is a clown college, actually. Well, I take that back. They call it the University of Washington. That is clown college right there. I am a kid. But no, and that's exactly right. And so much of the job and doing it the right way is looking for that comedic timing in a set parameter, you know. I mean, and a lot of my job is who I get to work with too. And you know, there can be you get an announcer that's got an ego the size of this trailer, and it's very difficult to entertain, because when you say something funny, their response is to say something funnier. It has to be about them, and that's where you get into trouble, and a guy like me, you know, kind of struggles at a rodeo with that style of announcer, because I'm, you know, I bounce a lot of my comedy off of the announcer. I let them be the straight guy and call me the weirdo, and you know, and that's where, you know, guys like Wayne Brooks and Justin McKee and Bob Tallman, and you know, they're tremendous, and you know, I get to work with all the guys, a lot of tremendous announcers, and you know, I get 25 performances with Boyd Paul Hamus in Denver, and you know, so you learn a guy's quirks when you work with them a bunch, and as soon as you figure that out, what they like, I try to mold myself to fit their needs versus the other way around.
Yeah,
you know, I think that it's my job to kind of mold, and that's probably been another thing that's made me successful in this industry is, you know, contrary to what anybody would ever tell you, my ego is as small as it gets in this industry, because I just know that even though I've worked some of the biggest rodeos in the world, it's a small fishbowl of fame. It's a very small fishbowl of fame. And I think that I keep that into perspective. And you're always trying to create new fans. You're always trying to create new fans. And you can't come in with, well, I've worked the NFR, so there it is. Now, that's not impressive to a lot of people. They don't know or care. Right. And it's a very what have you done lately industry.
Ah.
And so that's why it's for me, I think we just keep our heads screwed on right, be professional, be very, very appropriate to everybody, and carry yourself with a very professional demeanor. And I think that helps. And that's yet another reason why I don't do a lot of partying at the end of a rodeo. This is what I do. This is my job. And so it's like asking an accountant, hey, do you go to work and have beer? I mean, do you ever drink beer at work? Well, no. If you're trying to crunch numbers and do a good job and be effective and be good, you'll have fun outside of your job. You'll go let your hair down on the weekends. Well, this is my job. This is what I do. And so I think that a lot of people fall into this rut. We got a lot of rodeo personnel and contract people that get burned out or fizzle out on their own. Because they come in and pretty soon they've gotten too much into that party scene, and they've gotten too much into we're stars and we're a big deal, and you know, it's, and pretty soon they realize they wash out pretty fast, I think. And when the real world, we're privileged to get to do this for a living. I make a living entertaining people at rodeos. Who would have thought that'd even be a job, man? Are you kidding me? So it's great for me. It's what I love to do, and you know, for everything from winning some awards to not winning them. You know, I've certainly had my share of failures as well. And so I think that they just make you stronger, and they make you appreciate the things when they come.
We've talked a little bit about how you don't have the typical rodeo sponsors that sponsor you. And can you talk about who your sponsors are and why you have chosen to work with them?
You know, and I certainly will, of course. But I don't even like to call them sponsors. I like to call them partners. Because I've kind of made a point to make sure that I work with people that I can be of some aid to. I don't want to be a handout. And so when I go into a meeting with a potential partner, I talk about what I can provide and what I can do. and that I'm open to different ideas, and that generally gets a better response than, hey, if you give me X amount of dollars, I'll put a sticker on my trailer, you know. And there's, I mean, without a doubt, the Western companies have just been hit ruthlessly by cowboys and cowgirls, Wranglers, the Cinches, the Montana Silversmiths, the, you know, Pendleton Whiskey, all of the Coors. All of those are well tapped by the industry, and I think that the PRCA, as the national sponsors for them, they do a great thing in it for our organization, and I would never criticize any of them. What I don't agree with is putting alcohol on the clown. I think that Coors is a great company, and I've sat down and spoke with Pete Coors in Denver for a substantial amount of time. Incredible man, incredible family, incredible product. I think it's stupid that we put it on the clown. I do, and I'll publicly say it. I do not agree with putting alcohol on the guy out there in makeup that I view as there for kids. Mm-hmm. I think it's a horrible message. And so I don't want to, I won't ever do it. I'll never take a dime from alcohol or tobacco. But right now, you know, most of the barrel men are Coors barrel men. You'll see Coors on their barrel. You'll see them really supporting the Coors program. And they truly do. The Coors Man in the Can program is very good to the barrel men that are in it. Treats them well. And it's not, you know, not necessarily financially lucrative, but it's, you know, they look out for each other, and they're very good about trying to pass jobs within that little circle, and that's a good thing for them. But I'm not going to do it. It's not for me. I've got ideological differences with it, and I don't want to do it. I want to retire out of this job being able to say I never took a dime from alcohol.
Yeah.
And I'll be able to do it. You know, I don't have enough, you know, the most of my career has passed me, so I'm in the later years of it, and I know that I have no intentions of ever going that direction. Now, in doing that, in taking that stance, you know, you've got to still figure out a way to help yourself get down the road. And so what I've done with the help of an agent who's extremely talented is we've gone outside the box with our thinking, and we're looking at ways that I can best help somebody. And notoriety is what I can give. Notoriety is the number one thing. You're going to see me at a lot of venues. You're going to see me driving down the road. I crisscross the United States, you know, from Florida to Hawaii. And so who out there needs people to know what their logo is? And that's where 811, the call before you dig, fit us perfectly, because that is a national campaign, and it's all about safety. And I know that it's preventing dig-ins, which can cost money. So there's definitely a financial aspect to it. But these people who are doing this job and who are spreading this message, their true concern, their original concern, is safety. They don't want people to dig into a power line or a gas line and hurt themselves. And talk about perfect lineup for what I believe in. It just fit us really well. So 811 is by far my title sponsor, my title partner, and you know, they treat me very well. And in exchange, you know, everything from wearing the jerseys to vinyling the trucks and trailers and everything, I have a passion for that company. I like what they do. They have a big national convention. It was in Phoenix last year. I gave up Rodeo Austin. That's a huge rodeo. I gave up Rodeo Austin for two reasons. Number one, they do a bullfight, and I don't feel like I'm the best bullfight barrel man. But more importantly, is that's the national convention for 811. And I felt like, you know what? I think it's more important for me to be there and speak to this company that's helping me get down the road and tell them, number one, thank you, and number two, here's what I'm doing to help spread the word and trying to keep 811 in the forefront of people's minds, because it truly is about safety. And think about who digs in. It's rodeo fans. It's rodeo people. And as much as I love the fans, we're the same boneheads that will go out into our pasture and go, yeah, I lived here for 9 years. Ain't nothing out there. And bam, we hit a fiber optic cable. You know, so, I mean, it's that clientele. It's NASCAR fans and rodeo fans that kind of have the bullheaded, I'm just going to dig where I want. You know, burn day, I don't need a burn day. I'm going to burn when I say. You know, it's that kind of mentality. And so it's a good message for the population of rodeo fans. Mm-hmm. The other big one that I partner with is Tim's Cascade Chips. And they're just a really good product. They're a fantastic potato chip, and they're kind of Northwest grown. The company was started by a guy named Tim Kennedy right there in Athena, Oregon. My mom went to school with him, and that's awesome. What started the connection. and a tremendous company, and they just, they've got a great product, and they're predominantly in the Northwest. And so, you know, they're a financial backer for me, but what they do is they send me product, and I put the product in people's hands. And one thing about Cowboys and Cowgirls, we're snackers. We drive 19, 20 hours. So we stop in and we snack.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's I've done everything from put the product into hospitality rooms and hospitality tents so that when contestants are getting fed, they try the sample of product to endorsing it at some stores, you know, doing some store visits. And I work for a company. You know, I'm not an employee. I'm not on their payroll per se, but When a company puts their faith behind me, I work for it. Mm-hmm. And so I don't just wear the logo. I ride for the brand, if you will. If you're a cowboy, you'll know what that means. and so those two have been tremendous for me. Then we go into Cactus Ropes. Cactus Ropes has been a great deal. Can't see it on a podcast, but I'm holding one right now. It's a kid rope, and they do a good job. They'll get the product into my hands, and I'll give it away. And I'll do it in a meaningful way. I'll play with the rope throughout the rodeo, but then I'll grab a kid and say, you know, hey, my friends at Cactus Ropes want you to grow up. Stay away from bulls, kid. Learn to rope. When you rope, use Cactus Ropes. And they're an official sponsor of the PRCA, and it's a good partnership, I think, for me as well. So there's a line of credit that they use, and that's a definite, you know, Western one, obviously. And the other one that is Montana Silversmith. They've been great, and they're just a nice company. They're a cool company.
Yeah,
I mean, Steve Miller to his wife, to everybody, they're just a really cool company, and I like being a part of them. You know, I wear a watch now, a Montana Silversmith watch, and I've got a, you know, a beautiful girlfriend that certainly fulfilled the ordering for the year. There was a case of stuff showed up, and so she is much more sprinkled with glitter now and beautiful silver work. And you know, they help me get down there a little bit, but a lot of what I can do for them is show support. And I try to get people to use them as their buckle company. Mm-hmm. You know, I took on a pretty big rodeo this last year that I work and have worked for 4 or 5 years. I've got a great relationship with them. And so I tried to, you know, send them a couple of samples and a couple of, hey, you know, you use Montana Silversmith. They're the official buckle sponsor. And so it works out. It works out pretty good in that direction. But, you know, I think that one of them that I have to is it's a Western store, and it's the Dress family. It's called Ranch and Home, and it's a big R style of store, but it's in the Tri-Cities and Milton Freewater. And those guys, that's the family that has just, you know, I'm one of the sons, man. That's how I feel. They're just a great, great family. And so I do a lot of promotional stuff. When I do Kennewick's rodeo for them. And other than that, you know, outside of that, they know, they're not stupid. They know that having a Ranch and Home logo on my truck, and I'll kick the door open and show you, having that logo on my pickup isn't going to get a guy in Billings, Montana to drive to Tri-Cities. But the website, you never know. I mean, if Ranch and Home has a product and at a price, they might do some online shopping. And so that's the idea. And, you know, so that takes care of most of them. You know, I got some exciting meetings coming up with Les Schwab, and, you know, the truck that I drive, and, you know, I've got to admit it, I'm a Chevy guy. I love Ram. I've been driving Ram trucks for years. They're a great sponsor of the rodeo. But I fell in love with this new Chevy. And, Jim Doran, Chevrolet, and he sells Ram trucks. He's the Ram dealer for the St. Paul Rodeo. That's how I met him. He was the Ram dealer, and he wanted to get involved with me. And I said, you know, he asked me when my next truck purchase would be. And I said, well, this truck's 2 years old, and I go through them. So I said, you know, but I'm really thinking I might do the Chevy. I hope it doesn't offend you. I love Ram to death, man. It's a solid truck, but I kind of want that ride of the Chevy. And he said, well, I'll be darned. I sell Chevys too. And a lot of dealers are like that. I think that, you know, the competitive nature is kind of, Ram rodeo reps are probably the only ones that it really matters to. And they don't even care that much. They just act like they do. I've had them give me a little crap about it. But, you know, every truck is good. Every truck is bad. And Jim Doran set me up in this beautiful silver truck sitting here. And it's just, it's been a great, great truck, and I can't thank him enough for getting me into it. I mean, to buy a new truck is $70,000+. They're nuts.
I mean,
it's nuts to try and buy one. And, you know, I certainly couldn't afford it. So if I didn't have a connection that helped me get into one, I'd be driving an old beat down, who knows what year truck, you know?
Well, I have a Chevy too. My first one. I've always had Dodges, but
I did too, huh?
Yeah, but
it's the 15 Chev, man. I don't know.
Mine's an older one, but my boyfriend just got a brand new one too. So
does he love it? I mean, yeah, it's just, and it's like it's him. Not. And I will say it and tell anybody that ever asks. We just got invaded by flies. You notice that? Holy cow!
Well, we are at a rodeo,
team of 700
right next to the fucking horses.
Yeah. There's 300 piles of poop within 3 feet of us. Sorry about that. But they park me at the very high end places.
Yes.
but no, the truck itself. You know, my opinion of it is that it's not any more powerful. It's not any. You know, I it's comfortable.
Yeah.
I feel like it's the Cadillac of pickups because it just, the ride is good, the seats are great, the heated and cooled seats. And I know you can get that in any truck, but this has just been a great pickup for me.
So, JJ, you went to the NFR in what year was it?
2012 was my year.
And so obviously you've had, you know, some huge successes in your career. You're working mm-hmm. some really big rodeos like Reno and
Ellensburg, St. Paul.
Yeah, I mean,
Billings, the Nile.
You've got an awesome lineup, and you've obviously worked your way up through the ranks. What advice do you have for someone who might be interested in a career in rodeo entertainment?
Well, I tell kids this all the time. Get a master's degree.
Don't do it.
You know what I mean? Like, I say it all the time because I'm one of the only clowns that has it, you know, but I did, this was a second career for me. It was probably actually more like fourth or fifth career.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was going to be everything from I was going to be a logger to work construction to you name it. I mean, everybody has these dreams. I was going to be a professional athlete, you know? And so I guess, you know, I would try to steer them to look, if you get injured in my job, nobody pays you. You're done. If you get, and I've broke my back, cracked my skull, had 3 knee surgeries. I've got an ankle that's bad. I can barely lift a shoulder sometimes. If you get beat up and cannot perform, nobody sends you a check and says, sorry. So you've got to have something that is your backup plan. If it's a kid wanting to get into this, I would say definitely go to college, man. Put something in place. Keep this as your goal. Keep it as your dream. I'm not going to poop on your dream, but I will darn sure say that there is a lower percentage that get to where I'm at than make it. You know, if 10 clowns start out looking to be where I'm at in my career, I think 10% would make it, 1 out of 10. So plan on being one of the 90%. And that way you're set and you don't put yourself into a horrible position. That said, what advice do I give to the person that wants to do my job? Be yourself. Be yourself. I have heard a lot of times, hey, you're just like Flint. And I kept having to tell myself, I don't know who this Flint guy is, but he must be incredible because he is, you know. And so it's, you keep doing what you do. Be yourself. Find what makes you laugh and use comedy that you're comfortable with and do what you do best. You know, that's what I would recommend. And if your style is old school style, then do that. And prove me wrong. Go out and entertain using the, you know, bring a broom and sweep the dirt like them old guys used to do. Remember that? You know, do that. Maybe bring a new life to it. Bring it back. Bring, you know, but whatever you feel comfortable with. That's the advice I give. Don't try to copy somebody. There's been a right. ton of clowns who have tried to get in a fat suit, or the air suits that I wear. And I've done that since 2004 when I did my first event. It was the very first event I ever worked, and I brought out a suit and I danced in it. And it's just been goofy, and it's become what's kind of, you know, the 3 F's. Fat suits, footballs, and fun noodles. Those are the 3 things that are me.
JJ's signature
tool
chest right there.
The 3 F's. And I mean, I'm a suitcase clown. I can fly across the country carrying a football, a fun noodle, and a fat suit that rolls up and I can be the same clown. You know what I mean? I've spent a lot of money on transportation venues. From I'm a pilot, I've got an airplane, to a big, you know, class A motor coach, to new trucks. I've got all this wrapped up in transportation, but the reality is I can do my job with a suitcase. You know, so it's be yourself, find what makes you funny, and use that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of prop comics. There's a lot of prop guys that need to have I would call it a crutch, and that would sound bad, like I'm criticizing them. I'm not trying to. But if you have to have something in your hand, and I've got a crutch too. You know, now that I say it, I've got a crutch too. I feel naked if I go out in that arena without a football to start the show. I got to have something in my hand that immediately connects me to the crowd. Mm-hmm. And that stupid little Nerf football, and I've had other guys have tried to do it, especially some amateur guys that I've helped get started. But you've got to, I was a quarterback, and I'm good at throwing that football, and not to toot my own horn, but if I want to throw it to that guy, I can throw it to that guy.
I saw you do it last night.
If you're off so much that you hit somebody that's not paying attention, well, then it's a nuisance. Then you're a nuisance, and you're criticized. So you've got to be able to do that. Now, if you're a Peyton Manning or a Colin Kaepernick or something, and you got that ability, you know, I'm never going to be offended if somebody tries to take something that I've done, because maybe they'll make it better. Maybe they'll tweak it and make it better, and more power to them. But the advice is be yourself. Find what works for you and stick with it. Stick with it. Because I've had guys that have come and gone, and guys that, you know, I've helped. I've booked them 7 or 8 little amateur rodeos around the Northwest. You know, hey, get this guy, try him out. He's new, but try him out. And the committees will call me and be like, that guy was terrible. He was terrible. He didn't do this. He didn't do that. And it's always tough when you are following a guy that was a favorite. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I feel bad, and it's going to sound arrogant maybe, and I hope it's not, but I feel bad for the guy that follows me at the Nile. I do well here. I love this crowd. I think they enjoy me. So the next guy doesn't want to try and be similar to me. They want to be very unique on their own, and right. Maybe they'll hit a home run and people will be like, oh, who was JJ anyway?
Yeah.
But you know, I've had both. I've had them where you followed a guy that wasn't that popular, to where I followed Flint at one show, and you know, it's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough when people enjoy a guy and they're used to him being there, and then it's you, and they're like, who are you? You know, where's our guy? We know our guy.
Right.
But that's the advice. There it is. I mean, be yourself, and you're going to hear no more than you hear yes in those first few years.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I didn't call a lot of rodeos. I didn't push. I let word of mouth kind of carry it. And the first couple of years, I would mix pro rodeos and amateur rodeos. In 2007, when I bought my PRCA card, I did probably 70% amateur rodeos, bigger amateur rodeos, but good ones, but amateur rodeos. And 30% of what I did was the PRCA level. And then it just slowly changed on its own. I didn't spend a lot of time calling and trying to book rodeos, because I think it decreases your monetary value. When you call a rodeo right off the bat, you're in the need column. Mm-hmm. You need the rodeo. And so it puts them more in the position of power. If they want you and they're calling you to come and get you, then your negotiating power is important. And as a small businessman, which is what I am, that's crucial.
Right.
I mean, you can't just be funny. You've got to be able to handle your business too.
Yeah.
And you've got to make a living in a very expensive world. You know, travel is, with the price of fuel now, I mean, it'll cost me over $600 to get here just in diesel. And that's round trip. And I drive a pretty fuel efficient truck. So, you know, it's a high cost. So there needs to be a high reward.
Right. Well, I think being yourself is always good advice, no matter what you're going to do.
Unless you suck. If you're a sucky person.
I
said that the other day, and I told Jill this. I said sometimes the worst advice you could give somebody is be yourself. You know?
Well, yeah.
Hey, you're an idiot. Be somebody cooler, you know?
That's true.
But
that's a good point.
Yeah. So if you're cool, be yourself.
Yeah.
If you're a dork, be somebody else.
Oh, well, I don't want to take up a whole lot more of your time, but first I want to just let people know where they can find you online.
JJ-Harrison.com. Yeah, but Facebook is good. There's a liked page.
Yes, and I'll put those links in the show notes so people can check out your website.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool. I check the like page somewhat and try to keep it somewhat updated.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's probably the, you know, my website is more informational type stuff.
Yeah.
And I try to get my schedule on there, but I'm not a real tech guy. I mean, I'm a people person. I'd rather talk to you than talk to you on the phone, and I'd rather talk to you on the phone than text you. You know? I mean, I like face-to-face communication.
Well, I just have one final question for you.
I have one final answer.
Okay, perfect. It's how I end all of my interviews. What do you think is the most important quality for any good cowboy to have?
Most important quality is probably for me, the way I look at it, is a people person. I think that we are in a dying breed. I think the American cowboy is in a... We've tamed the West, so why do we still rodeo? And we've got to understand that it is a sport. It is a business. It is an entertainment venue. So being able to articulate it in my profession, I think, is important. Because when people see me roll into a gas station and see all the vinyl on the truck and the pictures and whatnot and ask me about rodeo, I need to be able to communicate what rodeo truly is. And I think you can create just as many fans outside of the arena as you can inside. So for me, the best quality to be a cowboy is, you know, being able to communicate effectively, followed closely. And this is true of all cowboys and all people, is that a love of animals. There's a passion and a love for animals that the American cowboy has. And I know it gets strung out sometimes. I know that there are, you know, from the different animal rights groups, there's extremists in everything. Mm-hmm. For every one PETA extremist that comes out that doesn't want us to breathe heavily on a goat, there's 15 cowboys that want to shoot them and run them off the road. And you know, there's extremists in everything. And so it's finding middle ground, and it comes back to my first thing, being able to communicate effectively to those groups that disagree with what we're doing as part of our culture and our heritage. And I think that truly the best way to explain it is we make our living with animals. If the animals aren't healthy and perform to the best of their ability, we don't make a living. So we truly care for the animals in rodeo and beyond. And you know, it's 5 o'clock right now. The show doesn't start for 2 hours, and guys are already out here feeding and moving animals around, making mm-hmm. sure they're watered and set for tonight's show. So yeah, that goes to tell you that even at the rodeo, and I'm not even referring to the ranchers that are right now. I mean, the price of cattle.
Taking care of their cattle.
Price of cattle right now is so darn good. Shoot, man. I mean, it's like just golden statues standing out there. So, but it's long overdue for them. And so more power to them right now. I hope the prices hold and our industry, you know, I think people can pay a little bit more for a hamburger, and we can pay off the rancher that's kind of been overlooked for a lot of years.
Yeah. I would agree. And I think that's awesome. I love how you say that the ability to communicate with people and share with them, you know, what rodeo and what the Western culture and everything is all about, because we need more advocates. We need more people that are living in the cities that have never been to a ranch or been around horses or anything to understand what's so cool about what we do.
Absolutely. And what's amazing is it doesn't even need to be a person from the city. There's people right. living right here in Billings that have never come to the Nile.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, this is a world-class event, and we want people to come up here, and we want that entertainment dollar. But instead of going to a movie, come to the show.
Yeah.
Come watch this. I think you're going to get, you know, you're going to spend a little bit more, but you can come out and have dinner, get a show for the entire family. And I think it's an experience that's going to leave you feeling, number one, patriotic, and number two, like you just got to look into a pair of binoculars looking back in time.
Yeah.
That this is the American West still alive today.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, JJ. I think we'll wrap up with that, but I appreciate you being here today, and I'll link to your website in the show notes, and hopefully people can go check you out and learn more about you and see you at a rodeo.
Giddy up. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
Yep.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with JJ Harrison. He is a really entertaining guy, and I love that he gave us some insights into his career. So definitely go check out his Facebook page. And if you have a chance to go to a rodeo where he's performing, I would highly recommend it. He's a funny guy. Just a quick reminder about my announcements from the beginning of the show. Don't forget to go to earnyourspurs.com and check out my new t-shirts. And also send me a screenshot of your review that you have left on iTunes so I can send you a sticker. And my final announcement, which I did not make at the beginning of the show, is that I am going to be launching a new podcast. I don't have an exact launch date yet, but that's going to kind of depend on you guys. The new show is going to be called Cowboy Q&A, and instead of an interview format, it's just going to be me talking for about 15 minutes answering the questions that you have submitted. So what I need you to do is go to earnyourspurs.com, click on the Cowboy Q&A tab, leave me a voicemail. It's super easy. You can do it right on your computer. You just click on the button on that page on the website and leave your voicemail with your question. Anything about cowboy culture that you might want to know, the gear that they use, rodeo questions, ranch questions, horsemanship, anything that falls within the realm of the Western lifestyle is perfectly acceptable. So please, if you have questions, go to earnyourspurs.com, click on the Cowboy Q&A tab, and leave me a voicemail. Because chances are, if you have the question, other people do too, and I would love to answer it for you. Sorry about all the announcements this week. I know it's a lot, but there's a lot of cool stuff coming, and there's going to be more announcements. So look forward to that. Thank you so much for being here and listening. You have no idea what it means to me and how much I appreciate you. I will see you next week.
For listening to the Earn Your Spurs podcast. Until next time, happy trails and spur on.